Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
All right, and welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And a few weeks ago, I had done a show with Timothy Renner and Mike Cleland and I believe Joshua Cutchin, and we were talking about some of Timothy's experiences and whether or not he should use hypnosis in those. And Mr. Jeff Ritzman, who joins me tonight, had chimed in on that, saying that he's actually done a lot of research on hypnosis and stuff, and wouldn't recommend it for various reasons. So we're going to get into that. But welcome back to the show, Jeff, first of all.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
All right. And you also have a new blog.
I do.
And tell people a little bit of what that's about.
Well, I've been wanting to do that for years now. I mean, literally, I've been trying to get time to kind of sit down and collect my thoughts and figure out how am I going to write this blog and how am I going to kind of feed my way through it. I talked to George Hansen. It's probably been 2 years ago or more. And I was asking him, you know, when you read his book, by the way, if anybody hasn't seen his book or hasn't heard of his book, tricksterbook.com.
Trickster and the Paranormal is the name of the book, which is just Trickster and phenomenal. The Paranormal.
Yes, it is a great book. It's very dry, you know, and it's not always easy to comprehend in certain spots. You do have to read it over and over a couple of times.
Yes.
To get the idea. It's an abstract theory. This is the thing that you have to keep in your head, that when you say trickster, immediately that brings up notions of an entity of some kind or an imp or a devil or a demon, that sort of thing. That's not what this is about. This is kind of an abstract theorem of how reality seems to ebb and flow and how certain things seem to surround the paranormal in general. I mean, that's really what we're talking about on the blog. And I asked George, I said, you know, this has changed my entire view of how I view this subject.
Mm-hmm.
How do I view the paranormal? George's, the way he explained it to me when we had him on Paratopia years and years ago now, it literally changed the entire viewpoint for me. And I asked him one night, I said, George, why is it that more people aren't recognizing these consistencies, because there's so damn few in the paranormal? That you, like, if you're looking for consistencies, you're in the wrong spot in the paranormal, right?
Yeah.
So what about the things that surround the events that seem to be so consistent across the board? Why are more people not talking about what you've written about? Because it's a game changer to me. And he said, point blank, he goes, well, let me be honest with you. Most people don't know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
He said they don't understand it. They don't understand it. And they don't. And so it doesn't click with them. And I, you know, it wasn't only that what he related to us changed the way I looked at it, but then I began to discover more things on my own using what he had shown me. And so I feel like I've kind of, in a small, small way, kind of expanded the way I look at things in this, kind of beyond, I guess, maybe what he would have thought about doing, or how he would have advised me to go with this. And I said, there's got to be a way that I can write this out that is interesting to read, but gets the point across to people so that they go, oh my God, there it is. Oh my God, there it is. And people like to see examples. And George gives examples, but what about if I pulled examples from real cases, from real, looking at real investigators, looking at real, because that's part of it too, is the personalities in this. And I thought, I can write this. I can do this. And I started out with basically, here's the premise of what we're going to do. And the next post was, here's the terms we're going to refer to over and over, and here's what they mean. And so you can say a lot with these short terms that really can impact how you perceive the story.
Yeah.
And so the one that I just wrote, I think Tuesday, was an account by, of all people, Michael Shermer, uber skeptic guy, yep. right? Like professional skeptic. And he had a very interesting experience when he got married in 2014. And I went through and I explained, like, do you see how all of these elements surrounded his event? And these elements are exactly what we talk about, excuse me, when we talk about liminal states, the between state, the anti-structural state, the upheaval, all of that. All of these things surround this. And so you couldn't ask for a more textbook example of a weird event that is surrounded by all of those elements. And so I wrote it up. And surprisingly, I'm literally shocked at how much attention it's getting. Like, I looked at the hit count, and it's, like, pretty decent. For a new blog, it's pretty decent. And so that's kind of my goal, is, like, I'm going to try to explain some of the...
The hard-to-explain stuff?
The stuff that I see people just don't get. Like, I say these things to them, and they look at me, and they go, okay. Like, I know you don't understand what I'm saying. Because you can't explain it easily. It's examples are required.
And it is very abstract. That's part of the problem. You're dealing with an abstract concept that really has practical sort of implications on all this stuff.
It does. And that's the interesting bit, is that this is something, like, we're always looking for something to test in this. I mean, Project Core was a big part of how do we test people who've had paranormal experiences, and how do we find consistencies in who they are as people. And that worked to some degree. I mean, it was a preliminary study, so it's not anything that's it's going to reach a conclusion of any kind. But with this, you could literally start, you know, asking different questions during investigations. If you're a ghost hunter, if you're a ufologist or whatever, it doesn't matter what area of the paranormal that you're into. This can give you different questions to ask that I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to lie and say, this is an answer. It's not an answer. We're way too early for answers. this is about asking the questions that can get you other threads to pull on that may lead you in places that you didn't expect to go. And that can lead to, dare I say, a word often not heard in paranormal circles, progress. So, you know, like, I'm going for that, and hopefully somebody picks it up and goes, yeah, I get it, and I'm going to start asking these questions, and then maybe we start a different dialogue about all of these things.
It's funny, sometime recently somebody had complained that here on Where Did the Road Go, we don't offer answers. We just kind of, you know, bring the stuff out there and so on and so forth. And I'm thinking, no, that's just the whole point, is that there are no concrete answers. I mean, we can make suggestions. We can look at different stuff, but there's no, I don't know. The minute someone says they have the answers is the minute I tend to kind of lean away from them.
That's true. I mean, and particularly in ufology, which I guess is where I'm most associated with. I mean, the one thing about ufology that I've always despised is just how many people claim way too much information, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they claim to know these things, and, you know, I mean, and it happens in the ghost circles as well. I mean, it's like, you know, and I wrote this on the blog in one spot where I said that, you know, people look at an EVP and they think, well, that's the dead. Really? How do you know that's the dead?
Right.
How do you know that you're not talking a skip across time? You being a radio guy, you know what a skip is.
Yep.
I mean, you know, how do you know it's not that? How do you know it's not a billion other things? Immediately we go for it's the dead. When somebody renovates a house and they get paranormal activity, which is covered in depth on the blog, you know, that's a consistent thing. Mm-hmm. People who renovate homes, whether old or new, they get paranormal activity of one type or another. And people's immediately, the immediate thing that these, I call them performance researchers, say is, well, they've disturbed the spirits in the house who want the house to remain like it is.
Right.
And I just look at that and I go, you don't even know what it is. Like, you're immediately saying there's dead people in your house that want things to stay the same. And you don't know what a ghost even is. And you're already ascribing an entire, you know, ideology to these non-corporeal beings. I mean, it's the most non-productive thing, I think, that you can do. And it's the most pervasive thing that is done. We just need better questions. I mean, I really think George laid it out really well in his book, but I'm just trying to, like, I don't know, somehow give examples so that people can go, I see now what it is. And I'm trying to work it kind of like, it's like the Rosetta Stone thing. Like, you know, like you take a Rosetta Stone course and you're not even, it's not even like, this means red ball, you know? You know, before you know it, you're just speaking it. And you don't know how you got there because you just know these words. And that's kind of the way I'm trying to do it, is to ease people in to where before you know it, you're speaking trickster. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And you're like, you didn't even know you had an epiphany. So if that works, aces, you know, I'm all for it.
Nice. Yeah, and then that is one of the things. I had a short story idea that I've never put on film yet, where some ghost hunters go into a house and they're walking around, you know, trying to summon up spirits and, you know, get the ghost to react. And at some point they see sort of a portal forming, and out of the portal comes like an axe or something and hits one of the members of the ghost team. The portal disappears, and, you know, they think that, you know, the devil did this or some demonic force did this and killed one of their members. And 10 years later, they come back to the spot to try and, you know, kind of get their revenge on this thing. And they do the whole ceremony again. The portal opens and the guy grabs a knife and or an axe and throws it through the portal. And then right. On the other side, you see the person 10 years ago who gets hit with the axe.
Yeah. And you know what? That's as good an explanation as any. You know, I mean, those kind of things, I mean, we just don't know.
Well, that's it.
And I always go back to this, and I'm not sure if a lot of people listening had seen this, or maybe you saw it. Way back in the day when ghost hunters first got started, they went to a hotel where a princess from over in Europe had stayed. She loved this place. This bedroom was her bedroom. Her bed was brought from Europe to this hotel. She died in that bed. She died in that room. And at one point, I'll never forget, they went in there and they said, "Princess, are you here?" And they heard nothing. And when they played it back, you could clearly hear a woman. Sounded like she was in the next room. Mm-hmm. And she says, "Yes, I'm here. Where are you?"
Yep.
And she said, and it was something else that she said. And I'm like, this sounds to me like she's there, but she's not dead. She's like, literally somehow something has opened or something is skipping to where they are literally talking across time. And you know, and that reminds me like of another, I think it was Mark Nesbitt had told me about something about a destroyer that was in World War II, where the men had said they'd be working in the hull of the ship and would look up on the gangway and see people in strange clothing walking by, looking at them like, and there were children, and this is like a tour group. I mean, that's what this looked like. So we don't know.
That's interesting.
We don't know. But there are certain things that do surround, and those things seem to be somewhat constant. And that is the bit that I'm trying to get people, at least right now, to float the idea and go, do you see this? Do you see how this works? And then we can get into why is there so much infighting in the paranormal?
Yeah. Well,
because that's part of it too, you know, and people think that that's just, they think, well, that's just a social problem. It's not a social problem. You know, it's not.
I think one of the early ghost hunters things, I think there were two that stood out to me on like the first season or so. Before they were obviously faking some stuff here and there. There was an episode in a lighthouse. Did you see this?
Yes.
And the thing kind of peered over. It was like a shadow, and they heard a woman's voice, and they went running up there, and it was gone, and then it appeared below them. And I'm thinking, if that's not the perfect trickster behavior.
Absolutely.
And the other one was they were in some kind of a baby furniture store type of thing. And no one had ever died there. They thought maybe it was an employee that worked there who had died at home or whatever. And they're walking around, they're calling out their name, and they get EVPs, you know, like they were saying, Lynn, are you here? Or whatever her name was. And right. The EVP says back, there's no Lynn here. And then a few moments later, you hear, leave us alone. And I'm just thinking, there could be someone in a parallel universe who's hearing these voices float through going, Lynn, are you there? And they're freaking out going, leave us alone. Who are you?
Yes. I mean, you know, I'm not sure if the first time, I mean, we did three episodes together, right? Or it was one long 6-hour discussion that was chopped into three episodes.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if I told you about when I was in my guitar room, I'm playing guitar, I'm plugged in, I'm really loud. And I'm playing, and my son had a girl over, and they were up in his room, and I wasn't too keen on that, but I trust him. It's cool. It's, you know, I figured it'll be okay until he gives me reason not to trust him. I trust him.
Right.
So at a certain point, they were upstairs and my wife was in the living room, and I'm playing guitar and I'm into it. I mean, really into it. And I'm sitting down on like an ottoman that I've got in there. And it's really loud, like I said, definitely loud. And at a certain point, I see my wife lean into the doorway, say my name, and she gives me that look like, you need to come here right now. And I'm thinking, crap, what has the kid done now? She's caught him up there naked or something. Like, what's going on? And so I turn off, I get my guitar off, I turn my amps and, you know, everything's off. I come out of the bedroom and the house is black. There's not a light on in this house. And it's probably, I don't know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. It's summertime. I remember that. And I said, Lisa? No answer. I yell up for Cody. He goes, yeah. I said, where's your mother? I don't know. I says, Kim up there? She left an hour ago. Oh, okay. I look out. Lisa's in the gazebo in the backyard reading a book. I said, what did you need? What are you talking about? She says, I mean, she was not there is the end result.
Right.
She wasn't in the house. She wasn't there. But I saw her. Our eyes met. I saw her face. I saw her reaction. She wasn't there. What is that?
Yeah.
You know,
That's reality. Reality doesn't work the way we think it does. That's what that is.
I believe you're right. You know, I believe you're right. I mean, I talk about these things, and it's just, to me, at times, anymore, it's comical. it really is. I mean, until it terrifies you, it is somewhat comical. And again, on this blog, we get into some of those things that I think at least could be valuable in terms of maybe not being so quick to jump on the bandwagon that fulfills your wish, because that's been a bigger problem is people hear an explanation that feels right to them or it sits well with them,
right?
And then that becomes what they become married to. And I'm pretty sure it was the first post I made. I said, this blog is not about being married to your thing. It's about divorcing your thing. And it's about trying to look in a different direction that might yield something that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
Just hopefully what they don't expect, hopefully that's still interesting to them.
And I think the thing is we have, you know, 10 pieces of a 500-piece puzzle or a 5,000-piece puzzle, and we don't know how many pieces there are. We just have the ones we sort of have, and we're not even sure we can identify.
Right. And I guess the other bit is that, like, I talk about George Hansen because this is the man who related it to me, and that's an important bit to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what he talks about is not new. This stuff's been around for 100 years. They've noticed this for decades. This is not like something, it's new in the way that George kind of presents it and his take on it and how he assigns more to it. I mean, he really has encapsulated a lot more with it. But this is not a new idea. It's not a new concept. This has been known about. And what I really find interesting about that is when you find something about the paranormal that seems to click, it seems to latch in, that's a really rare thing to happen. Yeah. Why do we forget this and go on to these other things? And that's part of it, too. By the time you get halfway into, you know, this, the plans that I have with this blog, you're going to be able to pick out of a crowd, like, okay, what UFO researcher or ghost researcher is going to lose their marbles halfway through the game? you'll be able to do that. Because it's obvious when you know what you're looking for, it's so obvious. Because we all know that. We all know that story. You know, the researcher who starts out really great and then just falls apart into like some kind of non-credible dialogue in public, and you're like, what happened to that guy?
Yeah.
That's part of it too. So I think it's a valuable thing. I think, and I tell you, it feels like this blog is writing itself, because it's effortless to me to do this. And I don't write, I don't write. I mean, I'm working with an author to write my book, I don't write, and it's really writing itself. It's been brilliantly, easy for me for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, maybe it's because you're supposed to write it.
I like it, though. I like the feeling that I'm getting doing it. So it's pretty neat. Pretty neat. So anyway, I hope people check it out. It's at numinousden.blogspot.com. Numinous. I had to pick the weird word.
Right.
It's N-U-M-I-N-O-U-S. Den, D-E-N, .blogspot.com. And I'll give you a link, Soraya, that you can put on the website or what have you.
I have the link for it.
Oh, great. Okay. So there you are.
And you've been posting new articles on the Roadgo group as well.
That's right. So there you are. You guys can access it there.
All right. And at this point, we're going to bring in Timothy Renner, who is also responsible for the Strange Familiars podcast that you can get here on Word of the Roadgo, as well as his own channel. How you doing, Tim?
Doing good.
All right. And just so people know, part two of your podcast just went up.
Yes, it did. Yeah, the part two is the singing corpse.
Yes. Yeah. And you two are actually, I don't think, very far from one another. You're in South Central PA, Tim. And Jeff, you're Northern Maryland. Is that right?
Northern Maryland, yeah. Hmm?
Yeah. So you're, subtle neighbors.
Yeah, close. Close enough.
I grew up in Northern Maryland, so.
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
So, Jeff, you've done quite a bit of work researching hypnosis and how it works.
Yeah.
And do you want to give people, and obviously this has been popularized and used in UFO abductions and experiences like Tim's repeatedly, and you don't think this is a good idea at all?
No. Not at all. I guess I probably started looking seriously at it in probably the right out of high school, probably like 86, 87, somewhere in there. And I just started out by calling psychiatrists and at psychiatry boards, and I started asking them about like what I saw being done as far as in later years, what I had seen being done in abduction research, what Hopkins and Jacobs were doing predominantly. They were the two kind of the poster kids for that.
Yeah.
And I said, what is this about? And what they are doing, is it really getting real memory like of these events? Is that what this is for? And I found a couple really interesting things right off the bat. I found that when I asked a clinician about this, I got a lot more of a gentle response than I did if it was an actual practicing doctor/psychiatrist. Or psychoanalysts. I mean, people like that said, oh, no. This is not good. This is extremely problematic. Whereas the clinician would say, well, it might be useful if it's being done the right way, for the right reasons, in the right setting, asking the right questions. And I found that years later, Jeremy Vaney and I would interview Dr. Scott Lilienfeld from Emory University, who is one of the, he's a preeminent psychologist and psychiatry, teacher of psychiatry, and he's written books on the pseudoscience of, psychology and what is real and what is not, and in that department. And I rang him when we started hearing murmurs of, things like the Emma Woods case, which people should be somewhat familiar with these days. Stuff like that was just starting to peak, and I thought, maybe it's time I revisit this on Paratopia and make I've got now this fairly large audience. Maybe I should talk about this and put it out there. And I called Dr. Lilienfeld and I explained to him the premise of why I wanted to interview him. He was not interested at all, not surprisingly. And he said, I just don't think we'd have much in common. And then I explained my position with it. And he said, oh, okay, this is something I might be interested in doing. And so we had him on, but he said to me, the interesting bit was, I think he wanted to qualify, like, what did I know? What had I found out already? And I said, well, I mean, I've been hearing this word cultural contamination and I've been explained what it means. I think that's a big part of this. I think that, the leading questions are a big problem in this field. The notion of false memory and that sort of thing. And I said, am I on the right track or not? And he goes, you are. And those are big things. But it's the mere tip of the iceberg, my boy. I said, oh. So when we had him on, he went into extreme depth about what was wrong about it and what is potentially seriously dangerous about it. And so when I was listening to my favorite podcast, Where'd the Road Go? and I heard some of the words being uttered. I was like, oh no, I really need to say something. I really do. And so, I mean, that's kind of where I start with this is, I had very deep suspicions that what I heard coming out of the alien abduction, quote unquote, research field, didn't sound like, number one, didn't sound like what I had experienced in my own life, but it also didn't sound like what people I knew and people I'd interviewed and people I'd talked with had happen either. So I'm like, what is this? Like, where is this narrative coming from? And how are they getting this cohesive story and scenario out of this? And I just wasn't seeing it. And so that's why I initially looked into it.
So how did they differ?
The notion of, I mean, the hypnotic regression scenario, like there is a scenario, you know, the person is in bed, usually a light appears, they're floated either through a wall or out a window, or they're carried out by what are obviously aliens. There's usually a UFO in the sky involved. But what's more important or what's more, I guess, story oriented is that they are on a table and they're being sexually probed in one way or another, male, female differs, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with that scenario by now. It's very clinical. It's very, as Whitley Strieber would say, little blue doctors, that sort of thing. Space doctors here to study us or tag us or treat us like cattle, that sort of thing. There's the notion of embryos being stolen, fetus is being stolen, meeting your alien daughter or hybrid daughter, that sort of thing. This is not what I was finding. I was finding extremely bizarre accounts when I would speak to people directly. Things like, I've read this somewhere lately where someone mentioned rabbits, of all things. I mean, it sounds weird going from one thing to another. But, you know, a guy is getting ready to go to bed and he looks out the window and there's a very large light in his backyard. This is waking hours. This is not anything hypnotically retrieved. And he said, someone makes their way out of this light. And he runs to the back of the house, goes into his bedroom, shuts the door, is terrified, looks to his right and sees a very large rabbit outside the window, like someone in a bunny suit. That's the kind of stuff you get. and even more bizarre than that, some of it bordering on what I call like alien psychedelic stuff. Some very weird visuals, some very usually vector visuals of one kind or another. Not the doctors, not that procedure, not the operating theater, not that. You get very bizarre scenarios, not unlike what will be in my book that you'll read, which will be very bizarre stuff because that's just what happened.
Has anyone had the experiences where they consciously remembered the whole doctor incident?
People say so. I don't know. And you have to, again, this is where the blog comes into the discussion again. This would not be out of the realm to have happened, where you have this scenario that is basically co-created. There is a co-creation, in my mind, going on here with the paranormal, that things that you expect to see or things that are somewhat, I guess, palatable to you can happen in these experiences. But I find that when I talk to people, that these are very brief and surface level, if you get what I mean by that. You know, they'll say, yeah, I woke up on a table. Yeah, there were people around. But where it went from there was just beyond bizarre. So it kind of stops there. It might start in that place, but then it ebbs away to something completely different. You get those kinds of scenarios going on. But no, I've never met anyone who's given me the entire scenario of the typical alien abduction that they got from direct memory. I have not met that person yet. I know that sounds incredulous to a lot of people. I'm telling you the truth. I have not met that person yet. That's not to say they're not out there, because I believe, like I said, there is a process by which I think the paranormal may show that to some people. And that, again, is part of the self-negation. That's part of the confusion aspect of all of this stuff.
Yeah. So how would you think that somebody like Tim should approach this stuff? And how can he find out, if he wants to find out what happened to him, what is the best method to do that?
Tim, give me an idea, like, the experience for you went up to a certain point and then it ends and you don't know how it ends, or you don't know how it started, or how does it work for you that the memory is not there?
It depends on the event. I have, you know, clear, more specific memories of certain events, and others I just have sort of brief, you know, notions.
Okay. So it's seamless. I mean, you would say, you know, if you could walk a timeline of the experience, would it be seamless that there's bits that are gone?
I guess so. I think so.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure the question, honestly. The bits that are going, meaning, well, for instance, like the big one for me that sort of changed everything was actually, it's funny that you talk about the doctors. It was, you know, when I first remembered it, and I did, you know, I went over this in the show before, I woke up and thought there were three doctors standing at my bed.
Uh-huh.
And it was only much later that I sort of realized that was probably some sort of screen memory, right? Because I knew nothing about alien abductions. I knew nothing, you know, it just wasn't in my frame of reference.
Sure.
This would have been the early 90s. The only thing I had was an aversion to the cover of Communion. I knew that, like, without knowing anything about it.
Yeah.
I had an aversion to that. But when I saw this, you know, it was some sort of news 48 hours program or something like that. And they started playing these people's experiences. It was as if that sort of screen memory fell away, you know, and I saw, and I knew right then, like, okay, that's what that's what that was.
Okay.
Again, I never left my bed. I don't think I've ever left my bed in any of these experiences.
Right.
You know, if there's these things are real in the sense that, you know, walls and windows and other things are real, then they were at my bedside. I wasn't in a craft or anything.
Right. Right. Yeah. Sure. Sure. I can relate to that. I guess when I talk about the notion of seamless, I mean, you're talking about what you remember is kind of a fragment of something.
Yeah.
There isn't really a narrative that you walk with it. In other words, there's not a you can't go point by point by the experience. You just have this fragment of waking up, something's there, and you don't.
Yeah,
you know, I take a page from Jacques Vallée with this kind of thing, and I say hypnotic regression is a bad way to go because you already have a hint in your head of what you're looking for or what you think it is. This is the cultural contamination problem. This is why this is not good. And if you go to somebody, if you would go to somebody like Yvonne Smith or David Jacobs or somebody like that, you're going with the pretense that these are people who work with people who deal with aliens. So that's going in. Then you have all sorts of problems like you're trying to please the therapist to tell them what they expect to hear. You don't consciously always do this. But inside, you're thinking, I need to produce, or this is a waste of time. So there's that. And there's always going to be the suggestibility factor with this. What I say is, and what Jacques Vallée suggested to me a long time ago, which was if somebody remembered something, like they were walking in a field and they saw a light and then they remember nothing, I would go with that person to that field at around about the same time, and I would just walk with them and we just talk. We don't hunt for anything. We're just talking, and we're talking about, what were you thinking about? What were you doing? Like, do you remember? And you might think, like, I actually had a guy one time that we were walking in a field, wooded field, and he could not remember what had happened to him at all. He saw a light and then he remembers nothing past that. And I said, look, I don't know what the reason is for your memory not to be there. But there's something that will, as we're walking and we're talking about this stuff, that you'll kind of get. And we passed a cow patty and he almost stepped in it. And he's like, oh, you know what? That happened that night. And I remember seeing a cow patty there and I sidestepped it. And that brought him into, like, one little incidental thing can trigger a little bit more. Now, Dr. Lilienfeld told us that there are really no such thing as screen memories. That's a ufological term that's kind of born out of the ufological problem. They've kind of assigned their own terminology to this stuff. He also said there's not such a thing as people who suffer extreme trauma say, I've blocked this out of my memory. People say that and earnestly believe that they do this, but his outlook is that these people do remember in extreme detail sometimes what happened to them. It's not blocked out. You do know what happened to you. This is what I believe he would be saying. The thing that is difficult for me in this is that I don't, in my opinion, a lot of these experiences happen in an altered state.
Yeah.
Whether the phenomena puts you in that state, I think that's the case. I think the phenomena, whatever it is, when it happens, you're in an immediate altered state of one kind or another. It doesn't mean you can't function, but it means you're in an altered state. Now think about this. You're going to go into somebody's head and recover what they experienced in an altered state. You know, that's like trying to smell the color 9. I mean, seriously, it's that bizarre to make that statement that you could achieve this. If I were you, if you want to remember it, that's the real key to me. If you want to remember it, repeat it somehow. Like, wake up and just stare at the wall and think and kind of replay it in your head. But my bet is that people don't remember these things because they don't want to remember these things. And I've had experiences where I hadn't wanted to remember it, but I knew what happened. And I just denied it. I just said, there's no way that happened. There's no way that happened. And it happened. And I know it happened. There's something in your mind that, I mean, there's things that we see that your brain goes, there's no freaking way that's happening. There's no way that's standing there. And yet your eyes are going, well, there it is, bucko. It's right in front of you. And your head's going, impossible, not possible, not happening. Your eyes are going, I'm sorry, but again, you know, this just happens. And I have found that it works best when people repeat or try to walk the steps of their experience to just talk to somebody about it. Say, I was walking along here. This is where I lose it. This is where I just don't. And then as you look around the environment, things kind of come back a little bit. You'll start to remember these things because it becomes more, and I think what it does, and I'm no psychologist, believe me, but I think what it does is it puts you back in the environment where it happened, but it puts you in a safe environment that you can remember these things. In other words, it's not happening now. It happened, but it's not now, and I'm with somebody, so that makes me safe, so you think. You know, like, So there, yeah, I mean, it doesn't, but, you know, but that's important to know too. But it sets the stage for a different environment, and it makes it more conducive to accepting things that come to mind. But it doesn't mean that whatever you remember is what happened. Because memory is extremely malleable by this phenomenon. And it's extremely, memory is fallible beyond belief. It's so fallible. You know, I say if you can't consciously remember something from point A to point B, I wouldn't even bother. I mean, I said years ago when my wife and I had an experience together and we didn't remember this chunk of time, I said, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. There's a reason I don't remember it, and I'm sure it's a pretty damn good reason. And it probably is because I can't handle it. You know, so if that's denying it to myself, then I'm good with that, you know?
Well, you know, it may not be that you can't handle it. It may be the same type of thing that happens when we can't remember dreams.
Could be.
Because we're in an altered state
again,
when we dream. So.
Yeah. That's the thing. And see, Tim, and here's the thing is that event that happened to you, it has meaning. I believe these things have meaning. And if you value that meaning, and if you value that experience at all, because mine changed my life. I mean, I kid you not. My trajectory, I don't think, was supposed to be this place, you know, and it is. And if I could change it, I think I probably would. I think I'd say no. But that was not the option to me, because it happened and it continues to happen. And there's nothing I can do about it. And so my answer is I value it because of what it's done to me, in the way I think, in the way, you know, that I think about this stuff and the people I've met and it means something to me. It has value to me. I think it's important. And if you think it's important, the last thing that you want to do is put it in the hands of somebody like Hopkins and Jacobs, neither one who were trained at all in hypnosis or in psychology. I mean, Jacobs is a history professor, for Christ's sakes. I mean, this is not the people that you want to put this experience in those hands. You put it in your hands. It's yours. It doesn't belong to somebody else. And if you remember it and you decide to share it, fantastic. If you don't, that's fine too. But I think that, that we all need to come to grips to the fact that you had this experience that you don't remember all of it, or you feel like you don't remember all of it. There may not be anymore. That may be it. And the purpose behind it may be to make you do what you're doing now, to question it, to turn it over in your head, to do the mental exercises. That could be what it's for. There may not be more. You know, if it's a show of some kind, then you got the preview and there's no movie. I don't know. I mean, you got to consider these facts. I mean, these possibilities that, that could be the entirety of it. But there's just, with hypnosis, there's just so much. And I hear people say, well, I think it's a good tool if people know how to use it right. Nobody in paranormal knows how to use it right. There is no right. Okay. Hypnosis, I heard somebody on the program say, we don't know what the hypnotic state is. Yes, they do. We don't know what hypnosis is. It's a memory. It's not a memory recovery tool. It's a behavior modification tool. People use it too. It's great for stopping smoking, for stopping overeating, or it's any behavior that you have. So when you talk about using it to recover memory, and it's a behavior modification tool, what does that tell you? Yeah. Like, that's your answer right there. And we are learning such things about psychology every day that Dr. Lilienfeld told us something that blew my mind. He said, you know, multiple personality disorder? I said, yeah. So it's called dissociative personality disorder now. He goes, do you know that it's now thought that that disorder, I mean, think of like, I mean, Sybil was the famous case, but we all know that that case was faked, right? So, but we know, I've met people with MPD. It's now thought that that disorder doesn't exist until a therapist suggests that this could be the problem. Think about that. So you want to talk about suggestion and suggestibility. I mean, when you go to a therapist, they are in a position of authority. And so it's behoove upon you to listen to them, to follow their direction, to, you know, look to them for guidance. And then you get people like Jacobs. And I only need point to theemmawoodsfiles.com. Go look. It's there. I mean, this stuff is dangerous for all the wrong reasons that people in the paranormal think that this is a good thing or a right tool in the right hands. It's not. I mean, and the psychiatric community is pretty together on this at this point. And I don't know when the news of that is going to reach the paranormal community or the UFO community, for a lack of a better word. Because Yvonne Smith just spoke this weekend. This weekend passed at some conference, you know, and I was on a show with her at one point, and I put the pointed questions to her. She couldn't answer them. I don't know. It's such a complex subject that I know we're not going to cover everything, but when you've got leading questions and false memories that are hardened by hypnosis, that's the other part that's really weird. When you talk to somebody who's been hypnotized and remembers some horrible thing, you cannot convince them that that didn't happen, even though it's a 90% to 95% probability it did not happen. Okay? Hmm. There are girls out there that believe their dad raped them because of hypnosis, and yeah, it never happened.
Didn't they use in the Great Satanic Panic? Weren't they being hypnotized?
That is exactly right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And none of that happened.
Right.
Exactly. I know one of those girls that happened to, and she is still convinced that she was satanically ritually abused. And it's very clear that it didn't happen.
Yeah. There's zero proof. There's absolutely zero proof that ever zero. Any of those
yes.
happened.
Yes. And you know, if you mention something like that to people who believe in that, their answer is the same as I remember Terrence McKenna gave a lecture at one point, and he said, I talked to one of these abduction researchers, the top one in the field. He didn't mention his name, but you can guess who it was. And he says, you're telling me that these women have fetuses removed from them with no scars and no bruising and no evidence that anything happened at all. How do you explain this? And he said, the abduction researcher said, they're really good. I mean,
well,
you know, and that's the answer you get from people who believe the satanic ritual abuse thing. Well, they really covered it up well. These people are organized. You cannot talk sense. I mean, it didn't happen. So, yeah, false memory under hypnosis gets hardened. Now, that just means it's more real than real to you, that this actually happened. The problem also is, as Dr. Littlefield told us, if you get hypnotically regressed for anything by a qualified psychoanalyst or psychotherapist, which he says is doubtful to ever happen, it's very rare, but if it would happen, you might get it once. You might go once. Past that, they don't do it. It's not a repeated thing. Barbara Lamb, whose name I heard mentioned on here, she's an easy target, Barbara Lamb. She's an easy target because she hypnotizes people. I mean, I heard one person say 44 times on TV one time. Are you serious?
And she's at the leading edge of the whole hybrid thing where these people think they're half alien and half half human. And talking to one of them, I have no doubt that this person had genuine experiences, but I would really like to have talked to her before the hypnosis.
As we all would. I mean, that's really the thing to me. If you can get to them before anybody even suggests that, because they're already, I mean, that's a state to be in, man. I mean, that's a wild scene when you think something like this has happened to you. And then you start searching these people out that will do this for you. That's the other thing, is you don't find people to do this for you easily unless you're in the UFO field. Then you can find them everywhere. I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, people were doing this in hotel rooms at conventions, like ordinary people. They saw it on TV. I can do that. No. That, you wonder where these people came from. This is where they came from. So there's like, to me, there's a whole subset of the abduction thing that is this co-created myth with these researchers, quote-unquote researchers. And then there's the people who have conscious recall of these things that don't remember anything of the kind that is described by the hypnotically recovered people. There's a disconnect there, and it's really obvious if you look at it. That's not to say, as like Tim said, he perceived doctors. I think we have to examine what gives the sense of that. I mean, when you're surrounded by, I mean, one thing I can say about these beings, or whatever you want to call them, whatever they are authoritative. You know, like, you'll listen when they say something. And they don't always, but you will, like, take notice. You'll sit up like a dog and listen to what they have to say. So there's this authority sense with them that they are above us somehow. And that makes, that's kind of a doctor thing. You know, you're laying down, they're over top of you. It's kind of authority ridden. So that could say doctor, that could say dentist, that could say, you know. But you don't hear about people getting teeth removed, you know. Right. And meeting their tooth person later on in life, it's the most horrible thing that can happen to somebody, losing a child, you know, having that child come back, you know, as a hybrid, and this is the meeting, and they're studying how you react to this. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but it doesn't happen the way, you know, that you think it does. Will they deliberately throw a scenario like that at you to see how you act? Yes. Will they do it to scare you? Yes. That I have heard, you know, but this is all too ordered and poppy, I guess is that the word? Pop? It's very pop culture-ish, you know? Like, it's movie.
Yeah.
It's movie. It's story, you know? And the real McCoy is, you know, as near as I can tell, it's not that. It's story, but it's story like, you know, like the most bizarre bedtime story you've ever been told in your life. And you walk away going, all right, whatever that was.
And it doesn't tend to be clean and neat. I'm taking actually some serious solace in this, in as much as I kind of felt my experiences, and again, I hate to call them abduction because I don't think I was ever abducted. I was, when you say it's an altered state, I was very much in an altered state. I can recognize that easily. That's exactly what it was. But I always felt they were sort of lesser because I didn't have that, the spaceship and the pop culture, you know, experience that you talked about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the craft is not always there. I mean, and you get these weird questions, like when you relate an experience, like my wife and I had an experience where I saw someone near the bed. And I saw them. I mean, I laid eyes on them. I stared at them. I leaned over the bed at them. And they backed up. And I thought, oh, it's got to be a pile of clothes or something on the table or a fan or something. I don't know what that is, but I know it's not what it looks like. And it turned out it was, in fact, exactly what it looked like. And my wife saw it, and she rolled over and thought to herself, there's no way I can tell Jeff about this. And she didn't. She didn't until a couple days later when I told a friend of mine who asked me, is anything weird happening in the house lately? And I said, well, you know, I don't even want to talk about what I saw beside the bed on Sunday night or Monday night. And Lisa's like, I already know. And she then went on to describe exactly what I saw. It was there. I mean, it was real. It was solid. It was the most viscerally real thing that I ever experienced where I didn't feel like I was altered. But I know I was, but it didn't feel that way. It felt like I didn't know what I was looking at. That in of itself, that confusion state, that I can tell you from experience, that to me is altered. It did something to me, but it wasn't, I didn't feel weird. The room didn't feel strange. There wasn't that buzzing that I sense in other times. And I've literally seen a something in a hallway, and you can see around it there is some kind of, I don't know how to explain this other than to say, the static that makes up the visual cortex of, you know, what you're perceiving looks different around the something in the hallway. So there's some kind of reality that's being brought to bear with these things that isn't conducive to here. It makes it look strange. I don't know how else to describe that. It's really, you have to see it. I don't think that was that altered a state, and that's why it feels so viscerally real to me that this thing was beside the bed. There was no craft. And my friend says to me, your doors and windows were locked. How'd it get in the house? These are things that normal people think, you know, this is what normal people think. I think, what did it want? What if I'd have said something, what would it have said back to me? Would it have talked to me? Could I have touched it? I mean, you know, I doubt all those things, but you know, I never thought, well, how'd it get in the house? Well, it just got in the house. You know, there's not like getting in the house is not a problem, you know, right. You know, when you're tiptoeing on, you know, I don't know, like the edge of reality, like your bedroom is not a problem. So I don't know. I mean, but you can tell people perceive this experience when you describe it in completely different ways. Like that was a really interesting question that he asked. And I thought, wow, that's how you see this? How to get in the house. Interesting, you know? But no, I wouldn't do anything to try and remember other than repeat whatever experience that you're trying to get at. Just retrace your steps by yourself or with somebody else at around the time of day and just see if anything kind of comes to mind. But I wouldn't bet the farm on it, even if you do remember it. It's in my experience is you'll get these fragmented things until you start to really poke it. And then it'll go, oh, you like that? Okay, well, how about this? And you'll get more. And it won't. It's not the kind of thing where you'd be like, and I'm not saying you're wrong, Tim, But you'll go, yeah, I was not in my bed. And it won't, there won't be a question. Like, you won't go, I think I was probably in my bed. Yeah, you'll go, no, I was not here. So it depends on, you know, it depends on how much focus you put on it, how much intention you put on the experience. Because in my mind, in my experience, in my life, I have seen that time after time where when I go, what was that? And I ponder it. And the longer I ponder it, I mean, the skeptic, again, this is my self-negation here going on. The skeptic hears that and he goes, well, the person is primed for an experience. So anything they remember or anything they experience after that is going to be, you know, laying in bed listening for the bump in the night, right? That's everybody. You're peaked for it. So anything weird that happens or out of place, you're going to ascribe to this. No, I mean, you will focus on this to the point where you will literally have an experience that you'll go, yeah, there's no denying that. That's it. And it's more. Won't be a lot more, but it'll be more. And you'll remember it. And you'll know at that moment, yeah, this is real. And, you know, man, the rest of my life is going to be like trying to figure this out. And so, you know, I tell people, if you've had the experience, like, go on and do something else. Like, go paint a picture or something. You know, just do something else, you know.
So basically, don't dilute it by going under hypnosis, where it's going to enforce a false narrative onto it.
It will. It's like painting graffiti on the Mona Lisa. You know. Yeah, I mean, you're. It's not diluting it. It's diluting yourself into believing that whatever you're going to remember is it, and. That's just not how memory works. It's not a videotape, you know? And there's all sorts of factors that come into play that you don't even think about. I mean, Dr. Lilienfeld mentioned things to us that I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And I wish...
Like what?
I wish I could remember what it's like, you know, when it comes to... I'm looking at... I got to minimize my screen here for a second to actually get this. Let me see if I can bring this up. And this is something from Jack Brewer's book called, I believe, The Aliens Are Framed. And he has a whole...
Was it Aliens or Grays?
The Grays, that's it. I'm sorry, the Grays have been framed.
Yeah.
And this doctor, John F. Kilstrom, PhD, he wrote a book called Hypnosis, Memory, and Amnesia. Or a paper, he says, because the risk of distortion vastly outweigh the chances of obtaining any useful information, forensic investigators and clinical practitioners should avoid hypnosis as a technique for enhancing recollection. So it's not that, it's not even that you're whitewashing or you're contaminating the purest experience that you can have with this stuff. It's that it will turn it into something that isn't true at all. Or is something, I mean, Lilienfeld basically said to us, you want to use hypnosis, great, but the easier way is just to give him a bottle of Jack Daniels and get him hammered, because you get the same result. So the answer is, when people get drunk and see pink elephants, you know, we go, well, sure you were wasted. The same applies to, he says, to the hypnotic suggestible mind. I mean, it's like there is such suggestibility there. You can suggest anything, and the person will go, yeah, I can run with that, and because you're really wide open. It deals with the part of the brain that deals with fantasy, not memory. So this is what it does. It and you will be shocked if you actually watch some of the tapes that I've seen of people being regressed, the questions that are asked. What kind of aliens are there with you? Is there a ship? I mean, these kind of things are common questions, and they think this is not a problem. It's a problem, you know? And I think at some point in time, I don't know if we're going to see it in our lifetimes, because this moves as slow as anything I've ever seen. I think we're going to start seeing people getting sued for this. I really do. Because it's debilitating when somebody thinks that somebody came in their house and took their child, you know, out of their body, you know? And there's something that bears mentioning, you know, like there was a OBGYN that approached Bud Hopkins about, hey, any of these women willing to get an exam? And because Dr. Tyler Cookjohn will tell you, when a woman is pregnant, there is matter that will remain in her for many, many years. And it's real obvious. And he said there's not anything in this world, basically, that could remove a baby from somebody and it not leave evidence of some kind, you know. And and Bud basically said, yeah, I'm interested in pursuing that, and then never did. And as far as I can remember from the story that Don Ecker told, kind of stonewalled the guy, said, yeah, I'm not really interested. We're not into doing that. So, I mean, if that tells you anything, you know, there's a billion stories like that. And I'm not saying that Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs are necessarily evil people. I just think it's just a shame is what it is. I see it now for what it is. And a lot of it is selling a book. A lot of it is it's at the expense of people. I believe that. So, and that's why I said what I did when I heard this on the show. I was like, oh no, I can't keep my mouth shut about it. You know, like, there's so many more issues with it that, again, I'm just scraping the top here. But it should be, enough, you know, it should be enough.
Now, are those old Paratopia episodes still available?
They are. You can probably write Jeremy. I can get you some information for that because he contains the archives. And I'm sure he would be – I have Dr. Lilienfeld's episode, which I could send you, that has the whole thing on it. And this, by the way, happened at the time where Emma Woods had just come forward with her at that point in time allegations that – you know, things that Jacobs had implanted in her mind, the notion or the subliminal suggestion that she had multiple personality disorder. And it's on tape and it's contiguous audio, unlike what people will tell you. It's contiguous audio. So there's not like, it's not selectively edited, you know, to make it seem that way. It's clearly that way. And so that's, we asked Dr. Lilienfeld, did you listen to this tape we sent you? Yes, I did. What do you think? He goes, it's very disturbing. Very disturbing. You know, it's just, it's crazy. When you see what goes on, I mean, in the UFO field, as far as this stuff goes, it'll curl your hair. I'm not kidding you. I mean, I've seen it turn people absolutely crazy.
I bet.
And it's a shame. It is a real shame. And this is not people who were regressed to, you know, for a book or anything. This is just people that, you know, got their friends to do it or another UFO person at a meeting. Hey, will you regress me? Do you want to do that? Yeah, I'll do it. And they do it. And
right.
I mean, there's been books written on this stuff that, you know, is just, it's confabulated memory that's then hardened by hypnosis and everything else that I mentioned. Plus some, it's a big can of worms that you just don't want to, and like I said, if you have value for the experience that you had, that you remember, the last thing you want to do is subject it to anything that can compromise it. That's just the way I look at it, you know, and, retracing your steps, talking about it with other people, that's all really valuable stuff. And you will remember, stuff that I didn't know, like in the moment or a couple years later, you know. But it's just a piece of something. Like, you know, I went to a Gulf Breeze conference years ago, and I recorded a video, daylight, of a UFO during the conference, which was bizarre because at the next table, I was at a diner, and at the next table over is Jim Mars and Whitley Strieber. That's the only people that were in there were me and them. And there's the thing outside the window, and I go out and I shoot. Like, it was nondescript to me. It was interesting the way it moved, but I don't know what it was. And and I woke up the next day, and I hadn't been to the beach because it had been raining pretty much for 4 days straight prior to that. And there was sand all in the bed. I have no idea why. And then when I checked out of the small motel and went to the large motel across the street after the conference was over, I went in the bathroom. They had these great fluorescent lamps in the bathroom, and half my face was burned a la the Close Encounters sunburn. I have no memory of why that should happen, because it was overcast the entire weekend I was there. There was no sunlight, no direct sunlight. There's no way that should have happened. And years later, I'm in this house, actually. I mean, 20 years later or more, I'm laying on the couch, and I'm thinking about being in that parking lot going over to the conference. And all of a sudden, it hits me that I remember standing on the beach looking at a very close proximity something in the sky with lights on it. And somebody is standing to my right, and I have no idea who it is. But we're standing there, and we can't move, and we're staring right at it. I don't know where that came from. Nice. I don't know if it's real or not. But I can tell you this. It made me jump off the couch like, holy crap, that's real. That happened. It was that visceral. Is it real? I have no idea. I can't put, again, you can't bet the farm on it. You know, you can't.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we're about out of time. So you guys want to stick around for a few minutes and do something for the patrons?
Sure.
Okay. Tell people where people can find you, Jeff.
Paratopiaoculus.com. Spell it just like it sounds. And the blog is numinousden.blogspot.com. You can get the link on the Facebook page to Where Did the Road Go. So that's all there.
All right. And Tim, your website?
It got much easier since last time. Strangefamiliars.com. Oh. It's up and running, and that's the easiest place to get me and the podcast, and everything else I do is linked there.
Awesome. All right. Thank you both.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and we're going to end things off tonight with one of Timothy Renner's bands. This one's called Stone Breath. Off the album Children of Hum, this is a song called Just Like the River.
Some bread.